Well, it's every parent's worst nightmare to have a child facing a battle with addiction. I think sadly we know it is a reality for many families, and it's a reality that is ever increasing and presenting at an ever younger age. It's an issue that has no boundaries. It does not know race. It does not know class. It does not know economic standing. It could affect any family listening today. And we know it is one that has a devastating impact not only on the individual battling that addiction, but also on the extended family and their network of loved ones. So it's a great pleasure to welcome in studio today Monica McNaughton from Discover Me Counseling, which is based in Kenilworth. Monica has an honours degree in psychology as well as a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and she does extensive work in the treatment of addiction and particularly in counselling adolescents and their families. Monica, it's great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Before we drill down into the subject, won't you just tell us a little bit about the work that you and your partner Imogen McIntosh do in this field?
Okay. As you said, the practice is called Discover Me. We literally across the road from Kenilworth Clinic. We both used to work for Kenilworth Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been running an outpatient program for the last 2 years. And within that program, we've been seeing that our clients, they're getting younger and younger, which made us realize that issue actually starts at school.
Mm.
And I think a lot of parents expect their adolescents to be difficult, to push boundaries, to experiment, and that issue can be overlooked because of that expectation.
So you assume, well, they're going to rebel, they will push back a little bit. We sort of let that go because we know it's normal teenage behavior and perhaps not spot the point at which it stops being normal teenage behavior and becomes a problem.
Exactly.
Okay. When you say getting younger and younger, I mean, what's the youngest age of a patient battling addiction that you've encountered?
We only take, for our outpatient program, from the ages of 19. So, you know, our groups have become quite bottom heavy from the ages of 19 to 24.
And as a result, I know you've started going out to schools to try and address the market immediately before that, to get the 14 to 18 year olds and hopefully put in some intervention before they get to that point.
Exactly.
So what do you talk about when you go to schools?
You know, we try to let parents know that it is normal for their children to experiment. They are going to push boundaries, which we expect. What does normal experimentation look like? What is abnormal? So what are the signs when there is a problem? And what can you do if you think there is a problem?
Okay, those are some of the questions we're going to tackle in the interview today. Let me just remind our audience that if you've got a question, if you're a parent that has concerns, if you are looking for help or strategies, please do feel free to phone us on 021-446-0567 or to send an SMS to 31567. How do you actually define an addiction? At what point does somebody's use of a substance become an actual addiction?
Okay, the first thing it's quite important to point out is that addiction is a disease. So it runs in families. People are born genetically predisposed to developing an addiction to a substance or a behavior. And it's also important for parents to tell their kids that if addiction is in the family, let them know that they are more at risk possibly than other children who don't have addiction in the family.
If talking about defining addiction, okay, so that's a really important point to let your kids know if there is a family history, because it's something that's difficult to talk about. Many families would prefer to not go there, to sweep under the rug the fact that there was a parent who had a problem or perhaps an extended family member. But you're saying quite the opposite. Talk about it, confront it, let your child know that they more than anyone else should think twice before experimenting.
Exactly. Mm. And unfortunately, addiction is still such a taboo subject, and families are secretive about it. They do want to cover it up. Mm. And you're actually enabling that behavior by doing that.
Okay, now let's talk about some of the warning signs. As you said, there are levels of normal rebellion that you come to expect from most teenagers. What are the signs that this is beyond the normal?
Okay, hopefully we all know our children quite well. Mm. Some of the symptoms that we would begin to be concerned about. If your child starts behaving differently for no apparent reason, so for example, they suddenly become withdrawn, maybe they're frequently tired, they might be acting depressed, they might become quite hostile. If they have a sudden change in friends or peer group, Another big sign is a carelessness with grooming or a deterioration in personal hygiene, a decline in academic performance, and rebellious behavior like missing classes, bunking school, and generally pushing boundaries more than before. Other things would be changes in eating or sleeping patterns, weight loss, weight gain, and also deteriorating relationship with family and all their friends.
Okay, those are the warning signs. The big question is, it's twofold. We need to talk about what to do if you're seeing those signs and where to go for help. But I think we should also talk about what strategies can be implemented by parents to hopefully ward off getting to that point. Let's start with the former, though. If there is a parent listening who's going, tick, 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 I've seen those things, I've noticed this in my teen, what should they do? Should they confront the teen immediately? Should they seek medical professional help?
Sorry, I should have said it before. It's very important to say that even if you're sitting there going, tick, 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 my child is showing all those symptoms, it does not necessarily mean they are developing an addiction or there's some other mental health issue present,
yes,
like depression or something. So initially, if you are concerned, I would take time to plan your reaction. Don't freak out. Don't have a big blow up, because what you're doing then is you're going to push your teen underground. They're going to become secretive. They're going to think, oh my goodness, I can't tell him or her anything. Whereas if you try to stay calm and you prepare your reaction, you take a suitable time to sit down with them and find out what's going on. And it's also not about just talking to them, but trying to actively listen to what they've got to say. So rather than using why questions, which can make them defensive
and be sort of judgmental.
Exactly, yeah. And feel judged, the teen will feel judged. Rather use questions like, have you used anything, when, where, with who, how did it make you feel? And in that way, elicit as much information as possible to work out if there is really a problem or not, or what is actually going on.
We know some teens will respond even to the most delicate attempt to have that conversation with a shutdown, a total denial that anything is wrong. A lot of it comes down, I often think, with parenting to your instinct, that you as the parent, hopefully, as you said earlier, know your child. You will instinctively feel when something has changed, when something is wrong. If you get that door in your face, shut down, know there's nothing wrong, end of conversation, what then?
In that case, I would try and take a step back and maybe gather information from other sources. I know that feels uncomfortable, maybe trying to talk to someone at the school or other parents of their friends that you trust, without making it a big, big issue, but just trying to gather as much information as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And don't then isolate your child or try to make them feel as if they've done something wrong. Keep those communication lines open, even if you're not getting anything back, because the more they understand that you are there for them, you want to help them, you're not judging them, you're not angry with them, hopefully the more open they'll be to eventually opening up.
Okay, if you've just joined us, we're talking addiction with a particular focus on adolescence today. My guest in studio is Monica McNaughton of Discover Me Counseling. If you've got a question, you are welcome to send an SMS to 31567 or to phone in on 021-446-0567. And we were talking about what to do if you are seeing those signs. If parents feel that they do think there's a problem, either the child has conceded that there is a problem, or despite their denials, they do believe there is one. Many parents feel helpless as to where to go next. Someone like yourself, obviously, is a center that's available to help the older teens onwards. But for example, a 15-year-old, where does that parent turn for help?
We do actually have an adolescent group as well.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily for substance use. It's if your teen is struggling with any sort of behavior, anxiety, challenges that they're not coping with particularly well, then from the ages of 14 to 18, we do run that weekly group for help. Alternatively, you know, seek other professional help, whether it's a
psychologist. Hi there, just a quick question.
Sorry, we just had a bit of a technical wobble there. Sorry, carry on.
Whether it's a counselor or a psychologist, just to make sure they are specialized in addiction, they do know enough about addiction first, because there's many different areas of interest. Mm. And to take them to a professional just for a chat, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
A WhatsApp question coming in here from Graham, who makes the following comment. I believe addiction largely arises from the environmental circumstances one finds oneself in. Essentially, when the environment is problematic in some way and the individual doesn't have a way to address or cope with this. What would your comment be? You've already said there are genetic factors to consider. There is a familial history predisposition. How much of it is the environment, as Graham says in that message?
Look, a lot of it can be environmental. You know, it's that age-old argument of nature versus nurture, that you might be predisposed to it, but your life is running very smoothly. Mm. And the addiction might only kick in if you go through a traumatic event. But he's very right in saying that environmentally you might need to use it as a coping skill because, so... It's right to say it is environmental.
It's a combination,
as well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question is, what makes one person walk away, maybe try smoke that joint at a party and go, it's not for me, walk away, never use it again. And somebody else, it just takes that one time to get them hooked and it leads on to bigger and harder drugs, etc. Do we know what the difference is?
Look, it is a hugely complex disease, so I can't tell you it's exactly this. But what we have seen in our work, the type of people who struggle with addiction, most of them are highly intelligent, they are very creative. They speak about always having felt on the outside of things, on the outside looking in, so never a part of. There's a big hole inside that needs to be filled. And they're also highly sensitive. So the way they experience their feelings is tenfold to what other people would. Mm. And when they do eventually meet that chemical or that behavior, you know, then they actually feel normal.
Mm. You said that behavior as well, and Bruce and Takai will cut to your call in a moment, but I just want to follow up on that. That chemical or that behavior, we normally, when we think addiction, we think drugs, we think alcohol. Mm. What kind of addictive behavior are you referencing?
There can be gambling. It can be a sex addiction. It can be gaming. Eating disorders fall under the same umbrella.
Right.
And what they all have in common is obsessive thinking. You know, obsessive and the need for that behavior that or substance that makes you feel better. And they all have in common what you're actually trying to do is to numb the feelings, to push them away because they're too overwhelming.
Let's go to the lines. I'm going to ask you to pop your headphones on, Monica, so that you can hear Bruce, who's given us a call from Takai. Bruce, welcome to the show. Good afternoon.
Hi there, Pippa and Monica. So basically, I've wanted to call in for a while whenever you guys speak about addiction, but for me it's more from the child side because I'm 22 now, and you can never say you've kicked the habit completely, but I mean I have gone a long way from where I was. And the things that Monica is mentioning, I mean it all hits home, especially with the gaming, where when I was younger and in school I used to play a lot of games, and that was kind of like my escape. When I'd come home, I'd sit in front of the PC and I'd play games with people online and all of that. And then, yeah, I tried weed a bit in school, and it really just gave me a nosebleed and made my leg cramp, and I was like, what is the point of this sort of stuff? And then I went on a gap year after I finished school, and that's when I really sort of encountered it, because I didn't really have any external pressures to do things such as go to school and be a good student and all of that. Mm. And that's when the weed kind of worked for me, so to say. And it definitely became a habit, and I would look for it wherever I went, and when I came home, and it was time to live at home again, it became a big part of my life. And my parents were very different, I suppose, and not to other parents, in that they knew I smoked, and they said, fine, you smoke, we understand, you're 18. We just want you to do it here at home so you're safe and you're not doing it out on the streets and whatever, whatever. And I don't know if that made it worse, but it became a very big problem. I failed my first year at varsity, and they asked me why, and I openly said, it's because I'm just smoking weed all the time. So then the topic of, like, rehab and outpatient programs and all of that came into play, And I decided to give an outpatient program a try because, like, why not? Let me just see what I can do. And I went to one in Kenilworth there. I'm not going to mention the name. And I don't know. Maybe it wasn't for me, but I think the lessons that I learned from that and took afterwards to my life, to when the final point is that my mom said, show me that you love me by stopping. Hmm. And that was the big nail in the coffin, so to speak. I haven't smoked weed since then, which was a year ago, I think, in July.
Well, congratulations on that. So, first of all, Bruce, interesting comments. I mean, what's your immediate response to the pattern that Bruce has just described and that trigger moment for him being something his mom said to him?
Bruce, my first thought was, are you sure you're an addict? How easy was it for you to stop?
Look, when I was in the outpatient program, it wasn't easy because it's like letting go of your best friend, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's somebody that you always have to go back to. It's always there. And it gives you that feeling of, like you said, escape. And yes, I know it is a disease, but my dad always refers to it as a dis-ease. So there's something not right within the person that you are trying to fill with this external substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been in psychology for years now, and we finally nailed it down to pathological accommodation or compulsion to comply. So I would always try and make other people happy with myself falling to the wayside. And I think the weed was a form of escape. I could take some control of my life, go out, buy it, roll it, sit somewhere, smoke it, and kind of be in my own world for a bit, if you know what I'm getting at.
Something you were doing for yourself.
That's a really interesting comment. Bruce, I want to thank you for being as forthright as you've been and phoning in to share that with us. I mean, he's touched on several really important things there, but the one I wrote down was that issue of you can never say that you've kicked the habit. I remember I had a cousin who battled addiction, and I remember saying when I was at school and somebody came to chat to us as teens about addiction, saying, I have a cousin who is a recovered addict. And the person turned around and said to me, there is no such thing. Your cousin is still an addict and will be for the rest of his life. He is just a rehabilitated addict. Do you agree?
I do agree. We talk about going into remission.
Mm.
You know, so you're never cured, but you can manage it.
Okay, it's not curable. So that means that potentially it's something that once you've gone through the process of withdrawing from the addiction, as Bruce hopefully seems to have done, he has to be mindful for the rest of his life.
He does.
That he can't lapse back and think it'll be okay this time.
Yeah, and another route in, and this is a mistake a lot of people make, they might go into treatment because they are addicted to marijuana. So they think, well, that's fine. I've got this wax now. I just won't ever smoke again, but it's fine for me to drink. And really, it's about any mood or mind-altering substance. Not only can it eventually take you back to your drug of choice, but it keeps that addiction alive.
Just going to steal a few minutes to wrap up the conversation on addiction, because some very interesting questions and comments have come through that I just want to finish with my guest, Monica McNaughton. Firstly, somebody challenging the concept that you can get hooked on anything from doing it once, saying that's nonsense, that's a problematic stereotype. What's your view? Can you get addicted to something trying it just once?
No, I totally agree. You can. Or you can't, you know.
Depends
it
on
might
the person.
Take a few. We've got a lot of clients who say, oh, I smoked a joint and the first time I was really sick or did nothing, you know, and it wasn't for me. But just like Bruce was saying, the first time he smoked, it made his leg cramp and his nose bleed. But then later on, it developed into an addiction.
We were always told something like heroin, for example, you try it once and you're hooked. Is that true for some people?
It's definitely true for some people.
Yeah. Okay. So it depends on the circumstances, depends on the individual. Thank you for the question. A few people asking your opinion on drug testing for teens. If you do suspect something's going on, if the conversation has been shut down with complete denial and you still have that instinctive feel that something's wrong, do you think it's something parents should consider?
I back that idea 100%. You can buy a 5-panel test from Clicks or Dis-Chem. It is a urine test. I wouldn't just spring it on them. I would have the conversation of, I am concerned, and what will make me feel better is to test you now and then. I hope you don't mind. So it's not negotiable, but in a way, you making them feel like they do have some sort of say in the matter, even though they don't.
I'm just recalling, it's an interesting point. I'm recalling one school that sort of said, We will do random drug testing. I can't remember if it was on the rugby team or the rowing team or something like that. But the point being not that they wanted to necessarily test the kids, but they wanted to give the kids an out that if they were under pressure to try something, they could respond, I can't risk it because I will be tested at school.
Exactly.
Do you think that's a solid strategy as well?
I think that's a really good strategy. And another thing I would suggest to parents, that out, provide that to your kids. Discuss with them. If you go to a party and you're uncomfortable with what's happening, send me a message, and it can be a very innocuous message. Three little kisses, a cat face, whatever it is.
Your code.
But when you receive that message, you know that you must immediately go pick them up. And when you're there, you say it's a family emergency, whatever, whatever. So you help them save face. But the crux of that is the deal is no questions afterwards. So you don't say, why did you call me? What's going on? You just leave it. Even the next day, leave it.
Then because they've done the responsible thing.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, interesting one. It's hard for parents to wrap their head around that one, of wanting to ask questions the next day and accepting that the teenager's done the correct thing in calling you for help. You let it go. Just in closing, we spoke at the beginning of the conversation, Monica, about strategies for parents to implement before drugs or alcohol or whatever behavior it is becomes a problem. What would you recommend to the parent who's sitting there desperately wanting to do the right thing to help build their teen up to be able to miss all of this that we've been discussing? What's your advice?
Okay, we did talk about the taboo and trying not to talk about these things, but we all need to overcome that. I'm a parent as well. Talk to your kids. Talk to them about values, about behavior, about consequences. If you're listening on the news and somebody's arrested for a DUI, explain what that is. So they begin to understand more and more. The difficult thing as well is to model the behavior. So unfortunately, we all socialize and there'll be, you know, we all drink and our kids are there. They're present, they watch it. So yes, one or two drinks is fine, but if you are regularly drinking too much or even smoking a joint in front of them, the message you're sending to them is, listen, this is normal, it's okay. So be conscious of how you are acting and what behavior you're modeling for them. Another thing is that pushing of boundaries and that seeking out of thrilling new experiences. Provide them an outlet. Maybe take them rock climbing, take them canoeing, whatever's appropriate for your child, where there's a healthy expression or outlet for that need.
Monica, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Won't
you just share some contact information if listeners would like to maybe reach out to you, find out more about your programs? If schools are listening, we'd like to invite you to come and speak to them. Is there a website or a Facebook page or a phone number you can share?
Yeah, our website is www.discovermecounselingwith2ls.com. As I said, my name's Monica, the other person's Imogen, and the phone number you can phone on is 073-134-5517, and emails is either monica@discovermecounseling.com or Imogen, I'll just spell that, I-M-O-G-E-N, at discovermecounseling.com.
Monica McNaughton, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.